Kirby Monsters is a podcast about facing the unknown.
I start to float away from the earth.
Have you ever smoked crack before?
We're all kind of frantically searching for meaning.
They have the neurotransmitters.
I think we're all juggalos in some way.
Yo, we're not broken.
Crazed delinquents.
We're in our last days, young man.
Listen to Here Be Monsters,
the podcast about the unknown,
on the KCRW iTunes page.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation.
Books. Where would we be without books? Where would we be without Gutenberg? It's a rhetorical question, sir. But where would we be without books?
From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Michael Silverblatt, and this is Bookworm. Today, I'm doing my favorite kind of show. I hope to those of you who know the poet John Wieners, you'll be happy to hear him spoken of. To those of you who have never heard of him, you'll be happy to learn that a great American poet, John Wieners, now has a book. It's published by Wave Press. It's called Supplication. It's been at least 15 years since a Wieners book of poems has been in print. And I wanted to start by telling you something that Wieners says about poetry that makes him crucial, at least to my way of thinking. In a piece called The Lanterns Along the Wall, he says, "Poetry is the most magical of all the arts, creating a lifestyle for its practitioners that safeguards and supports them. Along the way to becoming an artist are many pitfalls for those who do not write, do not know what true magic is. And the idea truly to be found in the work of John Wieners is the idea that poetry will protect him, that poetry will save him, that however melancholy or saddened life is, a poem can turn that sadness into form and therefore turn it into beauty. I'm joined by the three editors of this book, Supplication. The book is published by Wave. And the editors are Joshua Beckman, C.A. Conrad, and Robert Dewhurst, all of them poets. Robert Dewhurst is in the process of getting a full-length biography of Wieners published, as well as a full collected poems. I am prepared to ask Robert to read an introduction that may situate you in the context of John Wieners and his life. Robert Dewhurst on John Wieners.
All right. Thanks, Michael. After graduating from Boston College in 1954, John Wieners enrolled in the final class of Black Mountain College at the urging of his friend Stephen Jonas. When Black Mountain closed in 1956, Wieners returned to Beacon Hill, where he founded the little magazine Measure, a prescient quarterly, quote-unquote, that only appeared three times in 5 years, but served as an essential bridge between the end of the Black Mountain Review and the first series of Origin magazine and the full-blown start of the mimeograph revolution in the early 1960s. Living in San Francisco in 1957 to 1959, Wieners immersed himself as much in the downtown underworld as the poetry scene in North Beach, filtering through the Jack Spicer circle and the crusting beat scene, but resolutely on his own path of exploring the, quote, dark secret reaches of human knowledge, experience, and writing. Wieners later described his poetic program of this time as, quote, to explore those dark eternals of the night world, the prostitute, the dope addict, thief, and pervert. These were the imagined heroes of my youth and the orders of my life. What they stood for, how they lived, what they did in the daytime, and I had to become every one of them until I knew. The night was their palace, their working ground. Its neighbor was the dawn, and that never to be known. Daylight was only to be endured. Borrowing a room at the Wentley Hotel, a low-rent SRO in Polk Gulch, for a week in the summer of 1958, Wieners wrote the Hotel Wentley poems, an indelible, melancholic pamphlet whose poems were later featured in Donald Allen's New American Poetry Anthology. By the time the Allen Anthology hit bookstores in the spring of 1960, however, Wieners found himself confined to a state mental asylum in Massachusetts, having thoroughly unnerved his parents by his earnest pursuit of a Rimbaudian derangement of the senses. Terribly, this would only be the first of a series of depleting internments that Wieners endured throughout the 60s and early 70s. But he never wavered from his profound sense of poetic vocation, even destiny, and in this period published a series of beautiful and beautifully different books while living on New York City's Lower East Side, in suburban Boston, and in Buffalo, New York. In 1972, Wieners returned to Beacon Hill and began a period of robust collaboration with the Fag Rag Collective, a post-Stonewall group of gay liberationists led by provocateur Charles Shively. In 1975, Fag Rag's poetry imprint, the Good Gay Poets Press, published Wieners' Behind the State Capitol, or Cincinnati Pike, a 200-page outre opus of poems, cinema decoupages, and abbreviated prose insights. Literary historian Jeff Ward has called Behind the State Capitol a deranged masterpiece of the American canon, one of the great books of the 20th century. Following publication of Behind the State Capitol, Wieners gradually retired from public view and ensconced himself in his small walk-up apartment at 44 Joy Street on Beacon Hill, continuing to write poetry and to make collages until his passing away in 2002, but publishing little. Rather, he told Raymond Foy in 1984, quote, "I am living out the logical conclusion of my books."
C.A. Conrad is with us in the studio, and Joshua Beckman is at the Carnegie Hall studio in New York. I'm going to begin by asking C.A. how you first encountered Wieners, what his effect was on you, and to initiate a cycle, I'm going to hope that you will read us a poem.
Mm-hmm. Well, first, thank you for having us. And it was an incredible joy to edit this book with Robert and Joshua. Well, John Wieners is one of those, I don't want to be ageist and say when you're young. It just so happens that I was lucky enough to be young when I discovered his poems. The magic is of this world, the angelic world, has never been more exciting. Once you start encountering people like Wieners, and I'd like to read a poem from the Hotel Wentley. And also, I want to say that I'm very excited that this is the 1958 reprint. I mean, I wasn't privy to this when I was a kid.
Yeah, Wieners revised the Hotel Wentley poems a few times. And this is the first time since the first edition in 1958 that the text of the first edition has been reprinted.
Oh, wow. That's great.
It's very exciting.
Next to impossible to find that first edition.
Yeah, it's very scarce.
Not anymore. All right. A poem for the old man. God love you, Dana, my lover, lost in the horde on this Friday night. 500 men are moving up and down from the bathroom to the bar. Remove this desire from the man I love, who has opened the savagery of the sea to me. See to it that his wants are filled on California Street. Bestow on him largesse that allows him peace in his loins. Leave him not to the moths. Make him out a lion, so that all who see him hero worship his thick chest as I did, moving my mouth over his back, bringing our hearts to heights I never hike over anymore. Let blonde hair burn on the back of his neck. Let no ache screw his face up in pain. His soul is so hooked, not heroin. Rather fix these 100 men as his lovers and lift him with the enormous bale of their desire. Strip from him hunger and the hungry ones who eat in the night. The needy and the new found ones who would weight him down. Weight him with pride and pushing the love I put in his eyes. Overflow the 500 with it. Strike them dumb on their knees. Let them bow down before it, this dumb human who has become my beloved, who picked me up at 18 and put love so that my pockets will never be empty. Cherished as they are against the inside flesh of his leg. I occupy that space as the boys around me choke out desire and drive us both back home in the hands of strangers.
It's gorgeous.
It's an amazing poem.
Yeah.
There are missing stanzas from the edition that I read that are, was it three?
Is it the final three stanzas of the poem?
And they're magnificent.
Wiener's removed in 1965 when he revised the poem.
And the whole concept of the poem, be with me in the bar where 500 men are making their way to the bathroom, often not to pee. Keep him with me. Put a spell on him so that although all the others may bow down and worship him, that he doesn't need anyone but me. What a love poem to go to the heart of danger, to the bar of 500 men, and still invoke the special spell of poetry, that poetry will protect you and your lover from any kind of incursion by others. And that idea that he found me at 18 and put love into my empty pockets. I mean, who doesn't dream of that at age 18? Who doesn't want it at any age? Josh Beckman is the editor of Wave and a poet himself. We're all poets here except me. Tell me, when did you first encounter Wiener's, and what was your response?
I also encountered him when I was in my, I guess, early or mid-20s, very early on. And I've been thinking about this recently. We've spent years working on this book and reading his poems and kind of getting to know him more and finding more. And I realized very early, before I knew any better, I found his diaries, his 707 Scott Street, which was a diary from 1959. And what it did, I think, for me, was just expose me to the inside of that sort of making and living and being with people that was completely interconnected, and that it opened that up very early for me, that such that I don't think I ever ended up looking for more discrete relations to poetry. And so the effect has gotten more and more profound over the years when I realize how fortunate I was to find it when I did. And now I don't know why. I mean, maybe it's just the sense of the kind of presence of not just his diaries, but all his work and the sort of open quality of it that just allows you or necessitates you be present with it. So I think it just happened. And then once it was happening all the time.
Can you read one of the selections you've chosen?
Sure. I'll just read a part from that journal.
Wonderful. It is the journal itself, published in part in this collection, Supplication, which has been edited by my three wonderful guests, Robert Dewhurst, Joshua Beckman, and C.A. Conrad. Take it away, Josh Beckman.
Okay, this is from July 22, 1959. She has brought her treasures out into the sun, and I spring to write them down. Four stills of Charlie Chaplin, two by two, walking on the road, then the end, spread out in a circle on top of the table, half an orange rind, the top of a crystal water jar, a sugar tin, driftwood, green stones, thrushes. My head is still heavy with sleep, the brain cells not open from the dream of night and the junkies stealing my bicycle and books. I love them because they are the boys of my childhood who would chase me home from school and leave this same terror. So that even here by the sea, the objects of my life return from another life that never dies. Fish bones, a pin, she brings me in another tin, charcoal, burnt newspaper. I tell her my dream, how they stole the bike, and I think some clothes because they gave us cigarette papers to redeem them. Red Sharp's car, and when I got my clothes back, they had someone else's name sewn on the label, an old name I will not reveal as I do the contents of table. The black circle drawn around the hole in the center, the clinking of pewter as she moves the objects around, the wash of the waves under us.
Josh Beckman, reading July 22nd from one of John Wiener's beautiful journals. So this is the season of John Wiener's, a kind of resurrection, which I believe he always knew about. He knew that resurrection and rehabilitation were part of the poetic itinerary, that nothing dies. I'm Michael Silverblatt, and you're listening to Bookworm from the studios of KCRW. I'm talking with editors Joshua Beckman, C.A. Conrad, and Robert Dewhurst about the book they've edited of John Wiener's poetry. They've called it Supplications. I think you can see why. It's because it's something of a religious vocation. It's because worship and pleading have something to do with it. We'll continue after this short break.
Immerse yourself in Rhythm Planet, hosted by Tom Schnabel, the world music blog and podcast dedicated to history, storytelling, and, of course, the music. Check it out now at kcrw.com/rhythmplanet.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. This is Bookworm, and I'm talking with editors Joshua Beckman, C.A. Conrad, and Robert Dewhurst about their book, Supplications, The Selected Poems of John Wiener's. I want to ask C.A. to read another poem.
It's called Charity Balls. Actually, before I read it, so I wasn't able to make this event. It was in New York. Were the one year?
Yeah.
And Robert Dewhurst and Joshua Beckman were there. Did you want to talk about where this poem comes from before I read it?
Oh, please. Sure. I now know the story of the poem, which is a new story to me.
That's great.
Raymond Foy, who edited two volumes of Wiener's Selected Poems in the 80s and was a really close friend of John Wiener's, he told the story of the poem. Essentially, the poem was dictated to him. John Wiener's was visiting him in his apartment in the Chelsea Hotel, and Raymond was apparently trying to do some work on a typewriter, accounting or something mundane like that. And Raymond says John was talking to himself. And Raymond was actually a little irritated by it because he was trying to work and John was distracting him. And in order to deal with it, he decided to simply, instead of continuing his work, to write down what John was saying, but to maintain the appearance that he was continuing his work so John wouldn't know that he was kind of eavesdropping. And apparently he transcribed this poem. And as soon as the poem ends on the page, I guess Wiener's realized that he was being transcribed and he stopped speaking. But later, Raymond presented him, you know, the type sheet. And I guess without any hesitation, John took it and wrote the title Charity Balls at the top.
That's beautiful.
I love that story. Charity Balls. I had a fellowship but lived poorly on slices of pizza. Later, a career of washing lettuce. But I have always been the same. It's a question of acquiring a mastery of tone beneath the crystal chandeliers and champagne on a glass tabletop. At the age of 5, I thought Scarlett O'Hara a fictional character. It was not until the age of 48 I knew she was real. Old clothes and bedroom slippers and a scarf wrapped around her head in low-cost tenement housing. She began talking about my writing and her sex life. I'm curt by nature and Dolores, but I knew if I worked hard, I'd eventually make it.
C.A. Conrad reading John Wiener's Charity Balls. Now let me see if I understand this. By this point in his life, Wiener's was gushing poetry. It was like
a mode of thought or of consciousness for him, I think.
A vast monologue, mm-hmm. an oceanic practice. One of the great things about Wiener's is that he insisted correctly that he was always a lyric poet, that the qualities of lyric poetry were the qualities of his poetry. He was perhaps more straightforward than any poet before him. I don't think that I know of, and anyone who wants to tell me, please send us an email. I don't think that there was a gay poet before John Wiener's who expressed as directly the hunger, the cruising, the night-long sessions of searching for physical satisfaction. He did shock people, and yet at the same time, the beauty of his lines says, oh, don't be shocked. Understand, this is like any desire. Now, I'm interested. Earlier, you were saying that one of his very most famous poems, that he edited two stanzas from it. Why did he do that editing so much later when these were his best-known poems?
He was just a perpetual reviser. I think he really saw every publication opportunity as a new opportunity to essentially rewrite each poem. So many of the poems exist in multiple versions. There are some interviews with him where he's asked directly pretty much the same question. And he says, I vacillate between the versions. I can't decide which I prefer. But I always do that to try to get new music out of language each time.
Wow. Now, Joshua, you've edited many, many books. How did you decide between using the poet's first version and his final version?
Oh, we talked about that a lot. And I actually think that was something that C.A. spent, I think throughout the process of working on the book, we all were pretty passionate about different aspects of the work and mostly just spent a lot of time reading them together. And I mean, C.A., you should talk to this.
When Robert showed us the chapbook that I'm assuming is the version that Frank O'Hara fell in love with.
Yeah.
It wasn't a revisit. It was a brand new poem. And it sort of just took me back to those original feelings of, you know, I wouldn't say sexual awakening, but a completely new understanding of what's possible in the world and being awake, fully awake and excited, and how poetry is a catalyst for that. And it was just a tremendous experience to sit there reading those. And I was like, oh my God, these stanzas that were cut out are some of the most beautiful things that I've ever read.
After all, there's no place in heaven where a poem is inscribed in marble. At least I don't think so. If you're a sufficiently Platonic poet, you might believe that there is an ultimate, a single version. But it really leaves us with the idea that there are no definitive versions, that one of the things about poetry is about, even after a poet's death, the ongoing exfoliation of what the work does. Do you think that's true?
Yeah, I think for Wiener's it was just you know, he had a procession. It was a process for him, poetry. It wasn't like a one-time thing where you would write the poem one night. He would be rewriting the poem for years.
Robert, would you mind reading a poem?
Reading in bed. By evening light, at the window, where wind blows. It's not enough to wake with morning as a child, the insistent urge of habit, sounds, to write a poem, to pore over one's past, recall ultimate orders one has since doubted in despair. Inner reality returns, of moonlight over water at Gloucester, as fine a harbor as the Adriatic, Charles said, before the big storm blew up to land ancient moorings, shards against sand, of memory at midnight. Ah, yes, the dream begins, of lips pressed against yours, over waves, tides, hour-long auto rides into dawn, when time pounds a mystery on the beach, to know death out of reach.
Beautiful. I'm going to close. I think this poem is so beautiful, especially its last six words. So please sit up. It's called Billy. He was as a god, stepped out of eternal dream along the boardwalk. He looked at my girl, a dream to herself, and that was the end of them. They disappeared beside the sea at Revere Beach, as I ain't seen them since. If you find anyone answering their description, please let me know. I need them to carry the weight of my life. The old gods are gone. What lives on in my heart is their flesh, like a wound, a tomb, a bomb. Did you ever?
That is beautiful.
That's one incredible, incredible thing. I've been talking with C.A. Conrad, Robert Dewhurst, and Joshua Beckman, poets, scholars, editors. Together they've edited Supplication, Selected Poems of John Wiener's, published by Wave Books. Thank you all for joining me.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you.
Thanks.
I loved having you. You can comment on today's show or read an excerpt from Supplications at kcrw.com/bookworm. Download the podcast from kcrw.com or from iTunes. You can also listen on demand with KCRW's smartphone apps. My co-producer is Connie Alvarez. Alan Howard is associate producer. The technical director is Mario Diaz. Special thanks to my assistant, David Sobel. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm.
I am a bookworm, he is a bookworm, she is a bookworm, we are all bookworms. I am a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is produced in the studios of KCRW Santa Monica. You can access archives of all Bookworm programs and podcasts, the most recent ones, at kcrw.com/bookworm. The Bookworm themes were composed and performed by Ron and Russell Mayle of Sparks.
Read this, read that, read this, bookworm. Read this, read that, read this. I am a bookworm, he is a bookworm, she is a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm when Bruce Bauman is our guest.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Reptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air. New music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.